the hometown side of this, what's it like to sort of change that conversation from one where, you know, you understand the backstory, but you have to kind of simplify it for people that are your friends and neighbors?
Any good business plan starts by a good level of respect of, I'm going to respect you, and Rob, I want to hear what you have to ask. Every business needs it, every customer, and literally even nationwide with its members, we need that. We need that communication together.
That right there was the voice of Grant Webb, owner of Webb's Home Store in Emmett, Idaho. And this, you're back listening to the Independent Thinking Podcast, and I'm your host, Rob Stott. You know, when I think about why I was so excited to strap on a pair of headphones and get back in front of a microphone, obviously, you know, number one, I love hearing the sound of my own voice, of course, no. But more seriously, you know, I love being able to share the stories of nationwide members and independent retailers out there. And, you know, the latest example of that being Grant Webb, with the home store and what Grant has going on. You know, he's obviously a successful business guy, has, you know, had a strong run with the home store and what he's done there, recently launching a website, talking about expansion, which we'll get into in the podcast, and all that great stuff. And, you know, a lot of great lessons that he can share, ups and downs, challenges that they face with tariffs and all that sort of stuff. But another interesting side to this is, you know, the musical venture that he's got going on with the Grant Webb Band, and just unique to hear how, you know, he can balance the business side of things with his passion for music, and really creates an interesting character that had a lot to share and a lot of cool insights. And, you know, before we dive into that conversation in that podcast, you know, I want to share just a small clip of, you know, some of what Grant has been able to create with his band members and what he's got going on. That right there is just a little taste of what you'll find with the Grant Webb Band. They got lots of great tracks you can find on grantwebmusic.com, and you can find them on wherever you get your music, on YouTube, and all that good stuff. So with that, let's just go ahead and dive into our conversation with Grant Webb of the Webb Home Store. All right, we are back on the Independent Thinking Podcast, and right now we've got a pretty cool story and pretty cool business to talk about, and you know, a pretty cool person at the top of that business. And Grant Webb, you know, appreciate you taking the time. You're out there in Emmett, Idaho, and you know, running the Webb's Home Store, but so much more to that story that I really look forward to diving into with you today. But, you know, first of all, just thank you for taking the time to call in and join us.
Hey, thank you for the call. This means a lot, and hope I can tell you what you guys are wanting to hear.
Yeah, well, I, you know, certainly one of the things I know we're going to hear about today is a music career that I think is pretty awesome. But, you know, we'll bury the lead there a little bit and wait to get to that in a little bit here. But, okay. You know, tell us a little bit about the home store and kind of what you have going on there in Emmett, and you know, what got you into this business.
Well, so I've had the home store here at this location for I think almost 3 or 4 years now. And it literally started with maybe a mattress and appliance store. Our community was kind of growing, kind of still kind of recoup from like our sawmills shutting down and different trades leaving. So we do mattresses, we do furniture and appliances. And I started the business though with repair. So we're slowly hitting, I think, started in 07. So.
Gotcha. And I know too, you know, the retail business, even backing up a little further, we had talked, you know, prior to jumping on a call here, and doing this podcast, that, you know, that retail wasn't necessarily in your family history, right?
So I didn't think so, but looking back, retail is basically selling goods to your community at lesser volumes and like a box store. And my family's been self-employed. I'm fourth generation that I know of, and we've always sold either fuel or our services, or even Pontiacs. My family was a Pontiac dealer back in the, I think it was like 40s, late 40s, quarter up to the 90s. So they've always been in retail, but I thought retail was selling taxed item like in a store. But I kind of have a different opinion of retail, I guess.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. And so, I mean, the home store is, I guess, as you'd say, a little bit different from kind of what, you know, the, I guess, more traditional stuff for your family. So, you know, was into. So what kind of, you know, sparked the interest to get into appliances and furniture and that sort of stuff?
I'll call and start back a little farther, be real quick. Growing up, I was around retail. My family sold fuel and delivered it and stuff. So I was always working. So my dad, because we were self-employed, was kind of a different schedule growing up, where we worked really hard on a farm, you know, bucked hay. And I think I bought my first truck when I was maybe like 12, because I wanted to be able to buck hay and do this and save money. And so along the way, we learned how to work. But when you work like that, it's not your typical 9 to 5, because as a self-employed person or from a family, you work 7 days a week and you work crazy hours. Sometimes you take off, but it's a lot of hard work. And I don't think people see that work your typical 9 to 5 job. So I was kind of wired to be self-employed, I think, just because of 3 or 4 generations of how we were raised. And another thing, like Emmett is a real small farm community, real handshakes. Everybody knows your family. Somewhere down the line, you guys all probably were related, you know, so that's just how we were raised.
Gotcha. And so what, tell us a little bit, you know, about the store too. You know, what's your operation like? You know, are you guys a single store retailer?
Gotcha. And... So on that, now the home store itself, I think it's been 3 years at this location. It's a single location, but we're in the process of looking at 2 more options on the closer towns that are growing. And retail wise, we're furniture is kind of what we went to. I would say mattresses are definitely your easiest. And then appliances, that's what I started with. It's a tough business, but you're learning, you know, with trade tariffs, things going on. There's change in sales. And I think any smart businessman has to change to your clientele. Like, I'd love to sell you a corded phone, but those don't sell real good today.
Gotcha. No, and, you know, a lot to unpack there too, you know, talk about some of the challenges that you might face. But, yeah. You know, going back to, you know, you mentioning that you're looking at some options to expand. When you're considering that, you know, you've been since you opened shop, a one-store shop. So what do you look for, you know, as you're thinking about expanding or what sort of drives the decision there to do that? And then, you know, how do you make sure it's a success if that's something that you'll ultimately end up wanting to do?
So right now, I do own, you know, roughly 2 or 3 other businesses. Depends on if you call the music career. That being said, we expand off things that are changing. And right now our hometown is changing, where we only used to be repair and fix because we were an older community that wanted to repair their old ones. Well, anybody that's an appliance dealer knows that there's a shorter life on them and people are replacing instead of repairing. So after having my repair business 13 years, we just closed it down, and one of my old employees started his own, which worked out perfect because we're geared more towards retail sales, delivery, and no expert installs and stuff, you know, professional installs, sorry. So that being said, we just expanded by bringing on more furniture than we did, and mattresses and appliances are kind of our third option. And that's when I'm looking at growth for other businesses to learn from, I listen to my community. I listen to them. These are overpriced, or I don't want to wait 3 weeks. I need it today. So we've changed gears on who our dealer is. And instead of being an independent, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Where you only have, you know, exclusive
right,
dealer.
Right.
That was hard for me in a small town because I wanted to be exclusive. I've always been the Maytag guy in my hometown, and they couldn't get me a lot of the products I needed. So now, you know, we piggyback off and sell some of GE's awesome products. But because we're in a small town, they don't treat you like they would Home Depot. So we just took on Frigidaire. And that really helps our community with price points, shipping. So I would say that my big struggle, and I think there's a lot of other dealers in small towns, that you truly need to have not a one-horse town. You need 3 horses to bring in equipment and appliances, because in a small town, off handshakes, when I tell this guy that his wash will be here Friday and Whirlpool oversold on Black Friday, 3 weeks later, he runs down my family name because I didn't keep my word. And that's been the hardest part of on this business, Rob, is I give them a handshake. I say my community, I'll do it. And when they don't back it up and my community doesn't know about what the trade tariffs are doing or shipping or drivers or weather and ports, they think that appliance is in my garage and ready to get delivered.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because I know, you know, I do want to touch on it at some point here, the tariffs thing, but the hometown side of this story and kind of the way you have to, you know, you're obviously, you know, when you interact with an organization like Nationwide and you get to shows like Primetime and you see and can interact with the vendors, there's that sort of engagement. But then, you know, you go back home and you have to talk to your clients and customers and really neighbors, so which is a really, you know, not unique from the sense of how I may approach it and view it, but for a lot of Nationwide members and you know, independent retailers out there, this obviously is a very community driven business. So what's it like, you know, just kind of paint that picture for someone who might not know, or even for the customers out there who might be, you know, listening, like, what's it like to sort of change that conversation from one where, you know, you understand the backstory, but you have to kind of, you know, not dumb it down necessarily, but simplify it for yeah, people that are exactly. Your friends and neighbors.
So one thing we did, and I know we'll touch on this later, is in a small town, I didn't have a website till literally the last 2 years. And everybody told me, if you don't have one, your business is dead. And I'm like, well, you guys don't understand that in a small town, you know, some people can't even get internet in some of our locations because they're still building towers here. And that's hard for people to fathom because we are 15 years behind from a big city. So I think there's a lot of other small dealers, especially like, you know, Nationwide West. I don't know as much in the core and the eastern ones, but so like right now, when I see something on the news, and I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't really watched the news in 5 years. And people say, well, how does a smart businessman do that? My news is in my hometown. I see people struggling with income. They wake up, they drive an hour because there's no jobs here. When they shop there because they have just enough time to get home with their family. So one thing we did, we finally got a website, and I have never promoted it, but what I use it for is it auto price matches. So in my hometown, when people know that if I drive an hour, I can save $30, they'll do that because things are that tight in a small town. And I don't know where you're from, Rob, but does that sound familiar to you?
I certainly get it. I mean, I'm outside of Philly where I'm based. So, you know, big city and whatnot, but we get the suburbs. You're not far from a Lancaster or smaller rural areas in sort of central PA.
So just to give you an idea. So our population here was maybe 3,000 when I was growing up. And then I remember now they changed the city sign at the bridge, which hadn't happened in forever. And it said 6,500. And then all of a sudden I've seen in my lifetime, it'd be 6,500. And literally in the last 5 years, everybody's moving here because it's like getting a little piece of heaven going back in time. And that's what's happened is these small cities. I if I waited a stoplight for 15 seconds, I'm like, I'm going to have to move. This is getting bad. And I drive to Boise, which is 30 minutes away. And it's the second fastest growing city in the U.S. right now. People can get in a traffic jam for an hour and drive 5 miles. It takes me an hour to go a place where I won't see another human for a week, you know?
Wow.
So that's we're pretty blessed here. So my retails, I learn a lot from Nationwide meetings, but it doesn't also cater to me. And so I'm going to tell you a funny story, and I won't tell you all of it, but one of our good competitors from the buy group booked my band to play a very nice resort and paid me good. And I put on a concert because they want me to look at what they had to offer. Right. Huh. And I realized I wasn't there to switch buy groups, but the guy there said, hey, you know, I'm a big wig. I started Home Depot's appliance sales, and he gave us a bunch of powerful messages. And he said, hey, here's one thing that you can do that Home Depot can't. You can beat them with service. You can beat them with knowledge and availability and your business ethics, right? So you have to price match them. And everybody goes, you can't price match them. Well, if you really take advantage of what Nationwide is doing for us and why we pay those little dues a month, you guys go to those big dogs and say, don't bully them because we're a big dog now. And how was our country built? The same way. You know, we started this country that the same way. So I think Nationwide, when people really realize what you're doing for little businesses, and that being said, with this podcast, I hope some of my people from Nationwide that are in the core stop and think about what's going on in the West. And yes, having a $1,000 website may be the best thing for them, but when we didn't have internet till a couple years ago in places, or some people don't, that's a lot of money to spend when people want to shake hands and read your reader board.
Certainly, and certainly understandable. But I mean, you know, now that you say you have that investment and you're, you know, getting into that online space. And I, as you've mentioned, you know, price matching is a big part of that. But what else has the website done for you, and how are you sort of leveraging it and using it, you know, to better your business?
So what's crazy is I fought my reps forever to get it, and I didn't want it, and I finally got it, and I thought it was a joke. But then after a while, when you go out and shake people's hands and people know who you are, they're like, oh, I can shop at home because you're closed when we get back from work. All of a sudden, we started getting a few sales. So the other day, I started with myself, you know, no employees, and we're up to 20 employees, which is a large business to me, but to some people, that's, you know, not. But I'll say my best paid employee is my website. It works 24/7. It knows how to price match, and it never makes a mistake unless I don't know how to use the computer. So honestly, I wish that somebody would have said that. But when everybody told me that, they never listened to me that we don't have internet here. So that's a lot of money to spend. So I think that any good business plan of growth, development, changes starts by a good level of respect of, I'm going to respect you. And Rob, I want to hear what you have to ask. And then you respect me and say, Grant, tell me this. This is a good communication. Every business needs it, every customer, and literally even nationwide with its members. We need that. We need that communication together.
That's awesome. And, you know, kind of a story and true, you know, testament to what sort of the power of this thing is, because that's a certain, you know, type of the way you describe that is certainly something that's not uncommon or, you know, we haven't heard or seen around, you know, before with other members. And so I, you know, what is it? You mentioned that you had your rep sort of, you know, pushing for it and maybe making you give in at a certain point. But what was it that actually convinced you, you know, that this is something that you need to make the investment in, not just to get, you know, someone off of your back?
To be completely honest with you, my rep came in, and this is a funny story. My rep came in selling me product, and I didn't know what he was selling me, but he was trying to help me. And I said, well, people don't work for free. What are you selling me? And over the year, we became really good friends. And the funny story is I tried to become a dealer with Maytag and Whirlpool because I had started that business. And that first year, you know, I was lucky to even pay rent, you know, and pretty soon I sold 30 dishwashers on my own through a third party. So I called Maytag and said, guys, hey, I sold 30 appliances. I did it all on my own. I'd love to talk to you. They wouldn't get a hold of me for 2 or 3 years. And it just so happened my nationwide rep was that guy that wouldn't call me back.
And oh,
so
no.
when we realized who each other were, we literally became best friends. And he said, Grant, he goes, I'm sorry, but this is how corporate world works. And I said, oh, that's not your fault. You should have told me that instead of not calling me. So now you work for me. I like this. So I know a lot of our business meetings may have a fishing pole involved, but we learned a lot from each other because we respected each other. And I'll say that I got a new rep, and I didn't know him. And it's hard to replace a friend with somebody you don't know, but it's business. And so I didn't really listen to him. And when he finally came and talked to me, I felt like he was trying to sell me something. And I said, why are you selling this something I don't use? Are you make money off it? And he kind of stopped him. And he basically came back to me and said, no, Grant, I'm trying to help you. But yes, I was selling you something. I said, that's all I want is for you to be honest. What are you selling now? Me and him had the best talk. He saved me money on my website, showed me what it could do. So I think what the whole moral of this and the whole, you know, positive from it is, learn to your rep, learn who they are, learn about them, make it personable. And when I do that with my customers, it's now family business. And that's what America was built on. We wouldn't have these big box stores if we wouldn't have all started working that way. So now that my rep and me have a great relationship, shake hands, talk, when he calls me to tell me about something Nationwide's doing, I listen because you guys have my best interest. And honestly, I'm not going to let you off the hook. I'm not going to join another bike group, but they took really good care of me with my music, so we need to talk again for 2021.
I don't know why, you know, I'm just a new guy here, so I don't know how much sway I have yet,
I don't pull this card a lot, but they're like, Grant, we could get you to the Grand Ole Opry if you joined our group. And I'm like, well, you know what, why don't I ask my group that? So
I'll see what I can do.
I hope your bosses are listening to this podcast too.
No, that's awesome. I'll certainly see what I get, what strings I can pull from here. But no, talking about some of those other challenges, you know, obviously the seeing you kind of overcome that website thing and you know, really dive into it and take advantage of it is awesome. And you know, there's some other things out there though, and you hit on it a little bit ago. And one of those the big things floating out there right now is tariffs and kind of what that's doing to specifically, you know, the appliance side. It feels like it's hitting every industry at this point, but I know a big one is the appliance side. And How big of an impact has that had on you, and what are you doing to keep an eye on it and sort of alleviate it?
We just had a meeting about this morning, so I'm really glad you asked this, because like right now in a small town, now you know how we're wired, what our population is, what our struggles are. I own a construction business, so we built our own storage place, because in a small town, there's no storage places. Where we're rural, we can't get trucks, and we're the last delivery because we're a long ways out of these hubs, right? So what happens is when I shake someone's hand, sell the product, and it doesn't come in, that person says, okay, but it better be next time. And after the second or third time of it changing, I have to refund that customer's money. And that doesn't hurt my feelings. It hurts my feelings that they don't trust me now with their money, that they had to go shop elsewhere. So if I could give a word of advice with all these buy times, get with your reps, learn when they're on sale, how to get money back, what to offer. And now that when I explain, our website, we're a penny less. And in our location, we have Home Depot, Lowe's, and then RC Willys is our other big one. So out of those three, we're a penny less. And I've been learning some of our basic, fridges, appliances. It's a different world on, furniture, bedding, but on the appliances, there's such little margin with these tariffs going up. There's no money to be made on them. And when I help this customer, it actually isn't helping them. They're waiting. They're upset with me, which hurts on sales down the road. So with the tariffs, I've noticed difference in pricing. I've noticed difference in availabilities. This morning, one of our computers said, hey, you're going to have this customer stuff Friday. It just got moved out 30 days and no one told us. In a small town, people without internet, they can't fathom that. We're just not getting their money to them, right? So what we're strategizing is some people have a big warehouse. RC Willys has a big one in Salt Lake, so they can ship up within 2 days. Well, me, if I place an order and it takes 7 days, people can't wait that long if their fridge went bad, or laundry. But some people will wait for a custom package. So what we're doing right now with these trade tariffs, we're buying smart. We're stocking what doesn't break our bank. And when those sell, people need them as an emergency. Because like, Rob, if you ordered a custom package today or your wife a chair in a month, would you be upset if it didn't come in Friday? Not as much.
Right.
But if I told you, I promise you I'd have it before your wife's birthday. She needed that. We shook hands. And then Ashley, or I'm not going to say any names, but furniture, this, that, did that to me. Those trade tariffs affected us so bad. And they heard about them on the news 6 months ago, and they're just now affecting us. But in a small town, we don't think about that. So that's why I don't watch the news. I listen to important things, but I listen to the news in my community, because their news is, why don't you have it? If you sell it, it's not in your store. How can you do that? That's not normal. But online sales is the world. And I think that if you can sell stuff online, but still have enough stuff in the warehouse to still fill your needs, that's the happy medium.
Interesting to see sort of that, obviously you're worried about the business impact from what it's actually doing, but then also too, it's the customers who, they're keeping an eye on price maybe, but there's that small, again, it goes back to that small town sort of relationship and what it does from that perspective. So certainly, a double-edged sword there and one that
I would like to see the opposite end of it. I'd like to go work with somebody and watch them for a month in a big city and be like, what? I never had any problems. What do you mean? What? They don't care where it was made. You know what I mean? They don't care who that I knew your grandparents. Like, I couldn't fathom everybody else's end of it, because this is normal to me.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, switching gears a little bit and kind of want to focus on the positive instead of those challenges. What's something that the home store and that you do really well that you think others could learn from?
I want you to know, even after that last kind of comment, that's negative, but we can make positive from it. I work hard every day, and this is why I'm so happy and love what I do. I like to help people. I don't know what it is every day. Some days it's playing concerts and signing autographs. The next day it's installing that package that the husband bought for that wife for Valentine's Day. And you know what? It may be getting that elderly gentleman that just moved into a nursing home that lift chair because he can't walk. I enjoy helping people. And along the way, when you look at it that way, money comes in and people want to spend money with you. Me personally, when I go into a place, I don't like getting attacked by sales and commissions. So we've never done that because I want to sell what you want and help you. And I know that's not, probably normal, but the more that I've done that, every day I see a smile on somebody's face. I shake a hand and, hey, we treated you like you were family. And to me, that's why I work hard every day. I enjoy the people. And in a small community, even a large community with my music, I love meeting the people. And I love still seeing people that want to shake hands and smile and say, hey, how are you? So
No, that's awesome. And I mean, it's just kind of, you know, inspiring and like reaffirming just about how important and the impact that, you know, the independent channel can have. That, you know, you think of a big box store and you go in, you see someone that you basically don't have a face. They just have a name tag and kind of the lack of personal touch there. And it's something you kind of take for granted, I guess, you know, being in a big city like Philly for myself and, you know, others out there, I'm sure that, you know, you just don't get that experience. And I'm sure it just ups the customer experience in a way that, you know, it's almost like one of those things you have to experience to actually understand it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's awesome. So, you know, it's been a theme and it's kind of permeated the conversation throughout here, but we got to finally dive into it. And that's the music. And, you know, it's, you know, I'll see, like I said, I'll see what I can do about getting you some big venues down the road here for Nationwide and at shows. But, you know, let's at least start by talking about what you have going on and the Grant Webb Band. You know, how did it come together and you know, where did this passion come from?
We don't got time to tell you everything, but I'll just say when I was a real young boy, I was maybe six, I got my first guitar. And from there, I started playing music, taking lessons, learned how to play three or four ones by ear. And that was kind of my family's talent. My great grandma played every instrument you could think of by ear. And she was the coolest grandma you could have growing up. So I think when I was 12, I got my first paying gig at New Year's, and it was with my dad's band playing bass. And I remember walking in, and 12-year-olds shouldn't be in a bar on New Year's, but I was getting paid. And at that time, my dad always paid me, you know, 50 bucks a gig. And I was like, wow, I could make that or work in the field for a week, so I'll play music. So when I got into high school, I had my own bands, and I grew up with two older brothers, and we all had our own bands. And when I hit 17, I started touring, playing out of town. I was going to be a touring musician. That's all I wanted to do, and I was getting paid in one gig what people would make in 3 days of working. So I said, man, I got this. Luckily, I looked 21 when I was about 17, so I never really had problems. But I had a brother that looked younger than me, so I always got in. But so I toured pretty heavily and, you know, made some really big contacts and shows. And to me, that was my dream. I made it as far as I wanted to. So I got married, had kids and went through a divorce and got remarried with some stepkids. And I kind of said, hey, I've enjoyed my music career, but I'm really going to focus on family. And, you know, I'm a religious man. I'm going to, you know, God, family, and my country is kind of what I drive on. So I said, I'm going to play a year or two of just my own music, Grant Webb Band. And I'd played maybe 10, 15 bands growing up. I just started writing from my heart. And one day I had a rough day at work and I wrote a song called Baby Let's Run. And it was about getting in an old Pontiac that my grandparents used to sell back in the 60s and driving to the coast and just having no worries. All of a sudden, I started getting a big following because people were like, man, that's what I want to do. And I'm like, well, I wrote that song because it was my feeling that day because I had a trade tariff and had to give someone's money back. and that's no BS. This time last year, every time this year I get really cranky and stressed because of all the stuff happening and third quarter, fourth quarter, this, that, you know, and so I start getting cranky and I like to write music. So I'll tour now all summer. We played almost 40 dates this summer out of town, out of state. We opened for some huge, huge bands. I don't want to, you know, toot my own horn, but there were some big ones. So if you want to ask, I'll tell you, but basically you can go check out my music on iTunes, Spotify. I'm getting ready to release another album, and we just opened up our own music studio called S&W Music Co. And we've been open 2 months and we've got 40 some kids taking lessons already.
Wow. Yeah. And that's, I know something that I wanted to ask too, you know, about here next, but before that, you know, one thing I want to ask is, you know, how do you, obviously you've got a passion that you're really diving into and seeing some pretty cool success off of, and you know, how do you balance that with, you know, going on tour and then you have the store possible expansion, you know, that you're talking about? Like how do you as a business owner manage the music on top of the retail?
Well, it's not easy, but I think any, you know, young businessman, entrepreneur, anybody is driven different than 9 to 5. And my mind doesn't shut off. Like last night, I woke up all night writing down ideas, business ideas, contracts, you know, real estate, building. So when I run 4 businesses, I'm calm. And so it is hard, but it also takes a very special woman at home to have my back. And, you know, we've had our struggles, but we've been the most amazing couple. We, you know, put God first, family second, and country third. And when my music career, I said that a lot. And like I joked to you earlier, but if that offends people, then I'm offended because that's my freedom of speech. And my family is not only in my household, but it's my customers. It's my employees. You know, it's my musician friends. And when you treat people that way, life's a lot greener because you watered your own yard.
That's awesome. So, I mean, and talk about the makeup of the band too. You know, who's in it with you? I think I see four members total. Is that accurate?
I'll stop you because we don't wear makeup in the band, but we have members. Because that's honestly, we just had a meeting last night with my manager, and I have these interviews and stuff on TV, and she wants me to wear makeup, and I'm like, listen, I don't think Hank done it this way, and I don't think this is what Grant should do either. But that's another talk.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's going to be so mad at me tomorrow. So do not edit that out of this, please.
I will not. I'll do my best
Brittany,
not to.
Brittany, that's for you, and love you.
No, that's awesome. So talk about the you mentioned the school, and you got some kids starting up that you're starting to teach, and you're doing some cool give back stuff as well with this.
Well, I like to do a lot for my community. I call it my tithing. I like to help out here and not talk about it. You know, anybody who gives a gift away and wants recognition for it, is their heart's not in the right spot. So I do a lot for kids. I do a lot for families. I do a lot for disabled people. And, you know, that's just what I do daily. And, you know, come hang out with me someday. We'll go talk to them. But, yeah, that's kind of what I do daily.
That's awesome. And I think a really cool, you know, way to keep – I think everyone has a little bit of a vocational passion that, you know, it's always nice to buy into and really sort of – give yourself that freedom of expression and you know, a break essentially too from the other stuff that you got going on in the business world and other passions that you might have. So it's cool to see, you know, a nationwide member sort of lean into that and have some success off of it and really, you know, create some good stuff too. I'm sure at some point in this, if I haven't already, you know, we'll throw a track on this podcast somewhere. You know, maybe in the opening, maybe at the end or something like that. And, you know, give people a taste of what it's all about and kind of what you're producing. But no, it's really cool stuff neat to hear.
So Idaho is pretty cool. I told you about our scenery. We shot two music videos this year and we've got two or three more in the works. And then with the new album coming out, there's some really cool things coming. But one of the music videos was an old cover song because a lot of people don't know my music yet. So I did one by John Anderson, and growing up, he was one of my favorites. And so it was called Seminole Wind. And what I loved about it is a lot of elderly people, you know, older generation know that song, love it. But these new guys don't know what music is. And I'll say something funny, maybe you'll appreciate. Only two times I get in trouble writing music is from my wife and someday down the road, Nashville Music Country. So I speak from the heart. And if that makes me an outlaw, being honest and doing the right thing, then I love Waylon Jennings. So I'm okay with that.
Oh, that's awesome. Grant, I really appreciate you taking the time. This was a very fun conversation and certainly a fun episode to put together. So, you know, taken up more of your time than I ever anticipated. So thank you again. And
thank you, Rob.
You know, look forward to connecting down the road.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
All right. And again, a huge thanks to Grant for taking the time to chat with us and share what he's got going on both in his business life and in his musical life. So look forward to following him along, seeing what he has coming down the line and listening to some great music from the Grant Webb Band. So appreciate you taking the time to listen, and we will catch you next time. And as we sign off, we'll once again hear a little bit of a clip from the Grant Webb Band. Thanks for listening.